your burns, or what to do when a child isn't breathing. Maybe you should ask yourself, do I want to be an average parent? You can't always prevent emergencies, but you can be better prepared. So talk to your healthcare provider or call 1-888-ASK-HRSA. This message is a public service of WUSB and Emergency Medical Services for Children.
Mission Impeachable.
Good morning, Mr. Hunt. Several high-ranking members of the Democratic Party are attempting to seize control of the government of the United States by legitimate means. They plan to use a free press, open discussion of the issues, and the universal franchise in an all-out effort to win the presidency. Should they succeed, all our efforts to repeal the Bill of Rights, pack the Supreme Court with right-wing morons, intimidate the media, suppress dissent, halt social progress, promote big business, and crush the Congress will be destroyed. Your mission, E, should you choose to accept it, is to stop these men once and for all by ensuring that the weakest of them wins the nomination and then sabotaging his campaign by any possible means. You will have at your disposal electronic bugging equipment, burglary tools, wigs, voice alteration devices, a camera disguised as a tobacco pouch, forged documents, a safe house, 500 loyal but clumsy Cubans, and $2 million in $100 bills. As always, if any member of your CIA force is caught or killed, the president will disavow any knowledge of your activities. This administration will self-destruct in 16 months. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. We'll need it. It's 6 o'clock, 6:02 actually, time for Off the Wall. Well, it's another Tuesday evening. How about that? Time for Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
What a adventure we had getting here.
It was different. I was talking about not wanting to upend patterns and you know, not have the same routine all the time.
Oh,
so
yeah,
you
did that all right.
I delivered.
We usually get coffee before the show because it wakes us up. You don't want to hear us drowsy and groggy and slurring our words and things like that. You know?
It helps.
Well, it might help, but people don't usually like that. But, you know, the place we usually go, it was kind of filled with scary people, and they were looking at us, and we just kind of felt uneasy, so we decided, you know what, let's go to the coffee shop on campus, because, you know, that's near some other errands we have to run, because
there are
we have many things we have to do before the show. And
I would just say there are a lot of coffee shops on campus.
A lot of
that's
coffee
another
shops.
Thing, so we knew we had options.
This is one of the more mainstream ones, and unfortunately the line went out the door, and they're very slow. I mean, because they're very careful, they're very slow. Okay, not saying that they're slovenly or that they don't do a good job. We didn't find out because we couldn't stick around to see if they would do a good job because they were taking so long.
They were overrun, I think, with students, which I was a possibility. I just hadn't anticipated it quite in such volumes. And I think a lot of the people that work there are students.
Sorry.
Themselves.
Spoiler alert.
Do you know that's a compostable straw?
We'll
get to that. We'll get to that
right now.
Okay. Be careful with it.
Yeah, so we had to storm out of there. Well, not storm, but run out, because that's all the way on the other side of campus, too. And we had to walk because we parked there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, come on, drive again. But it turns out that right downstairs, you can get coffee.
Well,
and what?
Right. Don't say exactly what building. I mean,
no, I didn't say what building. You don't know what building we're in. But, you know, some people can find that out easily.
The other, how shall I say, amenities require an entrance fee.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, there's a small, like, kind of a quick store, you know, like a
bodega. We have
convenience.
A bodega.
Yeah, it's basically a bodega. And I found out, I went in there, we were running out of time, and I said, I'll just check for coffee to see if I can get you some coffee, because, I mean, you have
this
daunting task of running the board.
This is kick-ass coffee, I gotta say.
So they have these machines that are cold brew dispensers,
uh-huh,
and like a nitro, so I could have got nitro cold brew, and it's not like nitro, powered or you know, like Jolt or something, but it's the gas, and it makes it kind of like a Guinness. Well, I just opted for the cold brew one, and that's what you're having there. And they also have plastic cups with ice in them pre-made in a freezer. So you open the freezer, get a cup of ice.
That's a bodega.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It felt exactly like
Mark
a bodega.
Mark my words, there's a cat in there somewhere.
I hope.
Yeah, there has to be.
And then you just go to the cold brew dispenser and, you know, add that to the ice, walk up, and there you go.
This is a good cup of coffee, although I have some notes about the straw.
It's a little small for that lid,
well, it's
right?
Well, a straw, but it's small, yeah, but it's also getting squished by the plastic, you know, top of the cup, and I'm afraid it's going to break. And if it does break, what am I going to do? Well, I guess I get this drink without a straw.
It's true. They're, you know, they're working out the kinks with these newfangled.
But it's not a paper. It's plastic.
But apparently, it's either made of recycled materials or compostable, or maybe it'll dissolve when you're done with it or before you're done with it. But it's some new thing they're trying.
Uh-huh.
I don't know about the rest of the plastic that you're holding, but, you know, try not to have too guilty a conscience.
You see that joke about plastic straws and Joe Biden?
Like, no.
I've been around forever. I've always been there. I've been dependable. And now all of a sudden you're mad at me?
Yeah, there's definitely.
I forget where I heard that, but it's funny as hell. It's true.
That's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Joe Biden, boy, did he cause problems this week. He and his son. Mm. My goodness. Our president is beside himself because of the details of this phone call he had with the Ukrainian president. You know what? As long as Ukraine is in the news, let me just get this out of the way now, because you know this is a sticking point with me. Folks, it's Ukraine, not the Ukraine, okay? It was the Ukraine when it was part of the Soviet Union. It was the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, okay? Then it was called the Ukraine because it was a part of another country. It was a region. If you call it that now, you're not acknowledging the fact that they're an independent country, and you still, this means a lot to them over there, believe me. They will be highly offended if they're called the Ukraine instead of Ukraine. Seems like a tiny thing, but it matters.
Yeah, watch one of their Independence Day celebrations, and you'll get the drift.
Yeah,
it's important.
It is. But the thing that gets me is everybody's getting this wrong. Politicians, newscasters, people that really should know better are getting this wrong. It's so easy. It's so simple.
Juan Gonzalez.
You going to pick on him? Yeah, I guess.
He
got it wrong.
And then he corrected.
You expect to get it right, get it wrong.
He got it right the second time, but yeah.
No, he said the Ukrainian president.
Oh, yeah.
And so, of course, there's a "the" there, because you're referring to the person.
Right.
But you might ask, how come, well, you just said the Soviet Union. There's a "the" there. Oh, yes, very good. You want to belabor the point? Fine, we'll waste time on this. It's called the Soviet Union because it's a description of the political union, like the United States, the United Kingdom, okay? And of the Netherlands, you want to throw that one at me too? Okay, fine, that's a description of a geographical part of the world, the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Not quite sure what it means, but it's a description. And whenever you use "the," that's usually what it is. It's a description of something geographical, or it's a description of the political union. But to call it the Ukraine means you're referring to it as a region of another country, and that's highly offensive. So I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Would the African Union work? That's not a country. That's
it's
like
a
the
union.
European
no, you see, that's,
yeah.
that's exactly
that's
it.
That's like the Soviet
the
Union.
The European Union. And yeah. Anytime you have a union, yes, you can put an article in front of it.
Right. Right.
It's not a big deal, but in this case, it does matter. So please, people, if you see someone getting it wrong, give them a friendly reminder. We don't have to condemn them unless they resist.
And just as an example, this feeds into concepts that have real effect. Like when I was putting forth the example of the Crimea.
Crimea, that's a region.
If you say the Crimea, I mean, it's not a country, but it's definitely a region,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of... lends to the current political situation.
Now, I have thoughts about that too. So all the friends I've won in Ukraine, I'm about to make into enemies now, because I'm going to say that I don't think the Crimea really belongs to Ukraine as much as they think it does, because it was always part of Russia, and then Khrushchev for some reason decided it was going to be part of the Ukrainian SSR back in the Soviet Union days. Mostly Russians live there. And it seemed kind of arbitrary that he suddenly made it part of the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic for, I don't know, tax purposes. I don't know what his reasoning was, but he did that unilaterally. And then Russia came in after the disagreements with Ukraine began and said, you know what, we want this back. And they took it. And, you know, I can see being upset at that, but I can also see why they feel, you know, this really is ours. And it's kind of a... kind of an important geographical part of the world, so yeah, we'll take that. And I don't see why you would want it. You know, if most of the people there don't want to be part of your country, why would you want to even hang on to it? What's the advantage of that? Let them have it, and in exchange, say, you know what, get out of the rest of the country, take Crimea, and you know, we'll get on with our lives.
I'm trying to think of a current example of the United States, like Guam, right?
Mm-hmm.
If Guam wanted to just be Guam or something. Or, I mean, what example of an unliberated territory that the U.S. currently owns but probably should belong to another country? I mean, there must be examples then.
Well, I know
if you're...
parts of Brooklyn want to secede.
I'm trying to think, like Texas. If Texas just left because it belonged to Texas, I mean, I wouldn't question that. I'd be like, yeah, you know, most people there are more Texan than American, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
are
California,
they American first, then Texans? I don't know. That's
if you're looking for a good example, California right now I think is the closest, because they're really at loggerheads with the federal government on the emission standard and all kinds of immigration issues.
But it's
so and their economy is one of the biggest in the world, not counting the other 49 states.
But it was not another country previously. It's like if Louisiana was reclaimed by France.
Kind of
right?
belonged to the Native Americans, Kyle.
Oh, goodness.
Yes.
You know, you're right.
And no, that's
true.
I am right. And, you know,
that's actually the real parallel.
Kind of wish they'd step up and say, okay, guys, this is our Crimea.
No, I'm all for it. I'm all for it, yeah. Tribal and indigenous peoples of both North America and First Nations, they really should reclaim what was taken. Then that would be the parallel.
Can we use this as an opportunity to put out our idea, suggestion for a Native American show here on WUSB?
Yeah, no, wouldn't that be great? This is a great time to mention that.
I would so love hearing Native American music and news and culture and things like that. And there's Native American people everywhere. There's, you know, all kinds of different remnants of tribes and also flourishing areas, too. But I want to hear more, and we don't hear enough. In Canada, you hear this stuff. There's a whole television network.
The problem is representation matters,
mm-hmm.
and without it, you don't hear those voices. And for us to go and set up something like that, we would be the wrong voices to be behind it. We would fully support it and so on, and I'd love to see it here, but we're not exactly the people to head that up, but it as you said, in Canada they've got the APTN network, which has sought licensing down in the south here.
Yeah, we have to look into that because they were talking about that a couple of years ago. I'm not sure where it stands.
Why
isn't there an Aboriginal or a Native American television network in this country that we can all get on our cable systems? You know, in Canada, everybody gets that network. It's required that you get that network.
They are in existence. I mean, there are indigenous networks here. It's just they're so small and so regional and maybe only available on reservations. I don't even know if it's terrestrial, like over the air, or they're only picked up on like a local cable access type situation. There's nothing that is syndicated, not even like all of West Coast that I would know about. I mean, maybe radio, you'd have more cohesion or more kind of a network style thing. But even in radio, I don't think there's like the Indigenous People's Radio Network. Does that exist?
If it does, it's small, and we don't get it here.
We don't hear about it.
I mean, there's every kind of network you can imagine is on the internet, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something that you can hear on the radio in many parts of the country that everybody is familiar with.
Well, there are, I think if there are enough of them, they ought to somehow coordinate so that they can have a larger presence. I know in D.C., like, there are, of the media pool, there are Native American networks and Indigenous peoples' networks, but they're, again, small and I think disparate. There may be a national one, but it doesn't get the kind of like cable distribution and syndication that a lot more commercial stuff gets.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, even then, like, there's definitely commercial opportunities in that community and for that community,
well,
too.
The music alone is something that should be played. I mean, you know, a Tribe Called Red and all that, but there's a lot more.
Yeah, oh, there's a whole lot of it. There's some huge festivals in Canada and could easily be as much here. I'm thinking food, too. There's a lot of native species and stuff. We were actually learning a little bit about that over the weekend, too. But that kind of blends with a lot of the agrarian culture and stuff. And I know, like, there's the Shinnecock Reservation out here in Suffolk County.
Yeah, if you're in the Shinnecock area, let us know. And maybe we can get a show together or something. It'd be really cool.
They could advertise on their new billboard.
That's right. They've got a billboard out there. Interesting. It's actually on the Daily Show we found out about this.
Yeah.
They have this kind of flashy billboard. I think it's on Sunrise Highway. And it's on their land, and they're calling it a monument, which I think is a bit of a reach. But you know what? It's on their land, and if it's a big middle finger to the people that took over the surrounding areas, then okay, that's valid. That I can respect.
They're really common all over in Washington, where I grew up, and it's illegal otherwise. But in areas that are a part of reservation land or they have rights to them alongside the freeways. They have put up basically animated TV screens, but they're otherwise illegal in all other parts of the system there.
You mentioned agrarian things and what we were doing over the weekend. We actually, I guess I can talk about my project.
We found it.
I've been researching this. Looking for something interesting to plant, because you've been doing some gardening and farming and things like that.
We're trying to offset our carbon footprint.
You know what I learned in the last couple of days? Farming is not easy. You know, I always thought it was really easy. I thought you just basically, you know, sat on your porch and threw some seeds into the ground. They came up. You basically, you know, pick them and bring them to market, make a ton of money, have this huge house and lots of land, and just, like, live the American dream. But apparently it's more difficult than that. And I'm learning. I'm learning that farming is not as relaxing.
Well, any romanticizing of farmers from way back probably had something to do with slavery and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if you look at a real local farmer, old farmer, they work. They're out early. And I know that tradition.
And when you say old farmer, they're 30 and they look like they're 75.
No, it's there's a lot of digging and the earth is tough, but I find it, I don't know, it's, there's some pride in it, I think.
Well, the area that I've been farming is about, an acreage, I'd say it's about maybe 4 feet by 4 feet. And that took a few days to till, and boy, the earth does not, yield easily. So, dealing with that. But the plant I thought would be interesting to experiment with is something called a Jerusalem artichoke. Now, it's not from Jerusalem and it's not an artichoke, but that's what it's called because of, I think, some Italian or Spanish mispronunciation or a word that sounds like Jerusalem and it kind of looks like an artichoke, but it's not. You might know them as sunchokes. They basically, they're like sunflowers. In fact, they're related to sunflowers. They grow to be 10 feet tall, and they have flowers, but they also have roots that are edible and quite nutritious and interesting. They spread like weeds, which I find, I have a lot of trouble growing things, but this is something that apparently anybody can grow, and once you start, they say they'll be with you forever. You won't ever get rid of them. So that sounds good to me. I can say I started that as people are trying to figure out how to get rid of these plants. But it's a Native American plant, something that was used over the winter. You harvest it over the winter.
Specifically to the East Coast here in this particular region.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a variety of tuber.
And we couldn't find them anywhere. We've been looking all over the place. I mean, you can order them by mail. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to actually find some. And we were out on the East End a few days ago. I just happened to look up on my phone, is there a place where you can find sunchokes? And I found a farm that had them, and inside of 5 minutes, we were at this farm talking to a farmer and his wife, and it was the most amazing thing, just being able to share this experience, talk about these plants, and just the East End in general, and just the farming life. It's really cool. It shows you something about this island, where you can just quickly get to a different culture completely and become immersed in it.
And share the enthusiasm for something and hear firsthand what it's like to work with this particular plant. And it's just kind of amazing, too, especially with food but other plant life, just how alien and how they are their own little worlds and how they work and what they rely on with soil biomes and all the crazy parts of a single plant or a single food crop. It's just amazing. So, anyway, it was kind of a fun educational last bit of, I guess, summer gardening. And
yeah, but I got my sunchokes. I got a whole basket of sunchokes. And
how much? That was really expensive.
It cost like $3.
Three bucks.
He made out like a bandit, that farmer. But we can plant them in the fall. I'm not sure exactly how it works. You plant them in the fall, but there's no frost yet. So are they going to come up? Are they going to start coming up and then die and then come up again in the spring? Is that how perennials work? I don't know, but you have to plant them at some point. I guess that's really it. You can also, I'm not going to plant all of them. We're going to try and actually have some of the sunchokes. We can figure out how to prepare them.
Yes, if you have a sunchoke recipe, your favorite recipe handed down from Grandma, please send us. And we'd love to know how people prepared these previously or if there's any particular recipes that they're tasty.
It's weird, though, how hard it is to find these things. Now, I know they are rumored to cause gas in some people.
Yes.
But apparently you can get used to that. Either you're getting used to having gas or your body gets used to it and you don't have gas. I'm not sure.
Well, just ride your bicycle more. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter. When you're out bicycling.
No, but it feels good being out bicycling, and it feels good digging in the soil and planting things. And I saw a bald eagle. That's kind of cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
We found a bald eagle that had been rumored to be in the area.
So, you know, we talk about a lot of the negativity that's going on and the environment being destroyed, but there is a lot of positive things that are happening, too, especially if you take care of your environment. It'll come back.
And just pay attention to it, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Observing things. It's, I don't know, it seems like obvious, but it kind of gets overlooked, and I don't know, it's good to slow down and appreciate that stuff, and also just learn about it, like learn about what's around you and how different things are interacting and stuff.
Yeah.
I know the turkeys in the area are doing really well.
Wild turkeys. We have wild turkeys all over the place now.
Banner season for turkeys.
Didn't have those when I was a kid. Didn't have deer when I was a kid. So I realize, you know, we're seeing these animals because they're being driven out of other areas. But still, it's good to have them around. And it's also nice, you know, to see a flock of geese or a flock of turkeys crossing the road. And everybody just has to stop. You know, there's no question. You have to wait for them. And they're taking their damn time. And I think that's good for us to sort of slow down a little bit, you know, and
appreciate that we're sharing,
yeah,
space,
exactly,
and sharing the environment.
Let's not think of them as a nuisance because they're actually good for us.
Yeah, they're beneficial. They're part of the habitat. But, you know, consider that you're perhaps in their way.
Yeah,
I always
totally
think that when we see deer and stuff, it's like, yeah, it seems like, you know, we're, you know, being obstructed by them, but we're kind of in their way. Like, they, you know, you can look at it both ways. I mean, imagine their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going on trails, and as the contours of the terrain take them on their, like, range. But, you know, we're just kind of artificially injected in the middle of a lot of those trails.
Do you know there are deer trails, little tiny trails that the deer walk on? They make their own trails. They don't use our trails. They use their own. And you can find them. You can see them. Little narrow trails that a human couldn't fit on, and that's how they get around.
Oh, man. So we shouldn't talk about hunting season.
Yeah, well, you know, I just have one thing to say about deer hunting. It doesn't do any good, all right? So people who think that, yeah, there's so many deer around, I keep hitting them with my car. First of all, if you're hitting them with your car, that's on you, okay? You have to be on the lookout for these things constantly. They're always around, yes, in daytime and nighttime. But if you're careful, if you're not speeding, you'll see them in time. I speak from experience. Hunting them? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, drive as though they were humans.
Yeah,
because you could easily hit a person.
Exactly.
Who's not wearing bright colors or, you know, reflectors, especially at dusk.
I see humans that don't observe road safety more than I see deer that don't observe road safety.
Yeah.
And squirrels, too. Don't get me started on them. Yeah. But as far as hunting them, it doesn't really do any good because, you know, the male deer, the bucks, they're not really faithful to the females. So once they're done with one, they move on to another. So they keep impregnating all these females, and it doesn't really affect things if you hunt a bunch of deer. Because there'll be more deer the next year. However, if you sterilize them, and that's a program that is being worked on in many parts of the country, for 3 years, the does can have kids. But that doesn't stop the bucks from trying to impregnate them. Now, if you just kill the does, well, the buck's not going to waste time on a deer that's not there. You see? that deer is dead, and he's just going to move on to the next living one. However, if she's alive but sterile, he's going to waste a lot of time and not produce any offspring. That's how you control the population. That's how it goes down. If you look around, you know that we have some deer hunting programs in the area. The population isn't going down. It isn't going down because you just keep impregnating as many deer as are around. You wind up with the same number every year. It's math. It's mathematics.
Yes, indeed. So there's a variety of ways to handle this, and we should try all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. all right. Well, while Kyle tries to quench his thirst. Oh, yes, that's right. He has a cough. That's what he was signaling to me about. Okay, good. So nature. That's what we've been talking about. A little bit of nature, and fall here on Long Island. It's October now. Are you okay, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
I switched to filters, so...
I wasn't sure what was going on there, so... but
no, I got a grasshopper in my throat.
Would you like some of this coffee?
No. It's your
strong.
Coffee. That is your coffee.
It is my coffee.
You are at the helm. You are engineering. This is FCC-required cold brew.
Yeah, it's really good, I got to say. Not to give out, you know, an endorsement or anything like that, but... I need energy.
Reasonably priced. I'm not going to give out prices, but...
The straw, though, could use some work. Okay, speaking of mathematics, I started talking about this last week, and I'd like to conclude talking about it this week. I did some number manipulation, I guess. Well, I didn't really manipulate it. I didn't change the numbers. These are actual numbers.
Is this the Electoral College thing again?
It's the Electoral College thing again.
All right, get it out.
And look, if you're going to roll your eyes like that at me...
I didn't know.
Just keep in mind that I did not invent the Electoral College, okay? Our founding forefathers, and for some reason, came up with this plan.
Again, this is a slavery thing, right?
Well, pretty much. It gives a lot of power to sparsely populated areas. And you can theorize as to why that was at the time, but one thing I think we can agree on is that times have changed. And there really is little reason why some people's votes should count more than others. You know, for something like the president, I think it should be a popular vote. If you argue otherwise, well, then why not other things? You know, why not all the other things we vote on? Why isn't that based on states? You know, take it or leave it type of polling that we have. I mean, it's basically, you know, if a majority of people in one state votes for a particular candidate, then all the Electoral College votes from that state go to that candidate. The other candidate gets none. You're basically negating the votes for all those other people. How is that fair? It doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, so anyway, these are numbers. And tell me, Kyle, if I'm not explaining it properly, if you have any questions
at
all.
I'm listening.
Okay. So total registered voters in the United States at the moment... As of 4 o'clock, 153,066,000. Okay, so get that number in your head. 153. Let's just say 153
like half,
million.
Half the country.
I guess, yeah, because we have about 300 million people. Okay. So some of them are kids. You can't really blame them. Some of them are people who just don't give a damn. But yeah, that's what it is right now. 153 million people are registered to vote. All right. So now let's count all the votes, all the voters in the 10 most populated states. That would be California, New York, Florida, Texas, states like that. Okay.
Okay.
If we count them all, that's 79,364,000, and that's 256 electoral votes. Okay. So that's
what makes the 79 again?
That's basically the 10 most populated states. It's about half.
Like Cali.
Yeah, it's about half of the total number of voters. In those 10 most populated states.
Do you have those listed?
Well, no, I don't have them listed, but it's not hard to
not
find
important.
Out. I
can, Illinois?
Probably. Yeah. It's New York.
New York.
And not all blue states either. Florida, Texas.
Florida.
Yeah. So anyway, that's 256 electoral votes. Now, I should point out, 256 electoral votes, that's not enough to elect a president. You need, 270, 269? I don't know if the magic number is exactly.
Yeah. There is one, though.
Okay.
A threshold.
So basically, we counted, I did this a couple weeks ago, so I have to remember exactly what I did. Okay, so if 100% of the voters in those states voted for one candidate, all right, you would have, and I'm also counting a state that has 8 electoral votes, and there's 2 states that don't use the winner-take-all system. So what we did was we divided that in half.
Okay.
And gave 4 electoral votes for one candidate, 5 for another. Okay, so that's the total there. So basically we have 256 from the 10 most populated states, 4 for the 2 states that don't take winner-take-all. They don't use winner-take-all. And then 8 for another state that had 8 electoral votes, and that gives you a total of 268. In other words, not enough. But you have 82,608,500 people represented with those 268 electoral votes. Now, again, this is a bizarre scenario. I'm saying everybody in those states, every single person voted for the same candidate. All right. And that is what you get for voting for the same candidate. You get 82 million people, 82.6 million people voting for the same candidate, and they only get 268 electoral votes. Whereas if you then go to the remaining states and you have each one of those states have a one-person majority, okay, they all vote for the other candidate, but they only win by one vote.
They'll win.
They get all the electoral votes. They get all the electoral votes. All right, and that's a total of 35,228,788
people. So less people can actually throw an election than the most populous state.
Of course.
That's what you're saying.
So if you have the scenario, and I know I'm doing a horrible job explaining it, but if you have the scenario where everybody in these populated states votes for one candidate, and then in all the remaining states, the other candidate only wins by one vote and thus carries all the Electoral College votes, that other candidate will win. Even though there's a difference, they lose the popular vote by over 47 million people. That is our system right now. Explain to me how that is possibly a logical system. Theoretically, you could lose by over 47 million people and still win the election.
It's disingenuous because it's not what we think of when we go in and actually vote. We think it's like a lottery or like a, not a lottery, but we think it's like a egalitarian sort of equal vote, but it's weighted. We don't understand how weighted it is, and I think that just feeds or contributes to disillusionment, right? Mm-hmm. And people feeling powerless because
they're like,
no, I'm actually only 1% of a vote because I'm in this certain state under this certain threshold because of this certain amount of seats and so on and so forth, and then that Electoral College system comes into play.
And this has happened twice now, you know, in the last couple of decades. It happened with George W. Bush, now it happened with Trump.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, you know, the people that are defending this system invariably are Republicans. Would they be defending this system if the same thing happened to them in reverse? It's not likely to, because of the way the system is set up. It favors those sparsely populated states that tend to be red, tend to vote Republican. So, you know...
Well, what about gerrymandering? I mean, doesn't that...
That's a whole other issue.
Redistricting...
That's a whole other... We don't have time.
They would just do that in the opposite way, though.
But how about taking away powers of governors by Republican legislatures? You know, they do that, too. All kinds of things. All kinds of ways of getting the power when the population isn't on your side. So, this is the challenge that we face, is the fact that the popular vote is going one way on all these issues... But a minority of people are clever enough to keep power and to keep driving things in their direction. So you have this false environment of conservatism that isn't really there.
It's not consensus. It sounds like climate change activism. It's like everybody's going one way, but all these, like, you know, handful of people are controlling and making it seem as though the sentiment is all about, yeah, we gotta make gas great.
If you have a scenario where you believe in something unless it benefits you, take a look at that. You know, if you have this scenario where the Electoral College is benefiting you right now, but if the Electoral College were not benefiting you, you'd say, yeah, you know, we should change that system. Ask yourself honestly. You don't have to tell anybody else. Just have an inner dialogue, you know, and tell me that, I'd be good with that. I'd be good if Hillary Clinton lost by 3 million votes and still was the president. I would not be upset. I'd say, yes, the Electoral College is the right system to have. If you honestly, in that dialogue with yourself, can say that you're cool with that, all right, you know what, there's nothing I can say. But I suspect most people would not favor that. If it continually hurt them or did not represent them. And I think it's time we change that. It's time we change a number of things. And maybe this is the time. Maybe people will wake up because of all the things that are going on right now.
Yes, indeed. And this has been another installment of Off the Civics.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this has been a week of reckoning. So, okay, so you have Trump basically being caught... trying to influence the president of Ukraine, and Well, the funny thing is he released the transcript, basically encouraged the transcript to be released.
He felt it would exonerate him.
Yeah, and it only proves the crime that he's committing. And clearly it means he doesn't think it was a crime. He thought that would exonerate him. Then the complaint from the whistleblower was released, and that had even more damning evidence to show what he was doing and why it was wrong.
I think what it shows is how little he's been told no, and how much he's been like conditioned to be able to do this kind of stuff with no repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like that's the furthest thing from him.
Yeah, he's the kid in the store that's demanding to buy things, always humored, and then you wonder why he's an impossible teenager and a lousy adult. And thankfully, people are waking up now. Thankfully, elected officials finally are getting off their asses and doing something about it and not backing down.
Well, and they're not as afraid of his phantom base.
Right. And, you know, it'll... Again, that inner dialogue amongst Republicans, would this be cool if it was something on the other side? No? Well, then stand up now, because history is going to judge you one way or another, and this is not going to last forever. So those people who are just kowtowing and repeating all the talking points, my God, they came up with this conspiracy theory that somehow the whistleblower law was changed that allowed this person, whoever it is, to basically submit a whistleblower complaint without firsthand experience, firsthand knowledge. And they said that this was changed so that he or she could submit secondhand knowledge. It was not changed. That's completely fabricated. But yet you see on all the Sunday talk shows, all these Republicans saying this, reciting this as if it were fact, getting people to believe it. It's not true. It's not true.
Plus, they, I think I was seeing some things today. There was firsthand accounts as well.
Of course, yeah.
And interviews, and it was pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, you basically had intelligence officials looking into this, finding that there is, in fact, something to go on here, and also issuing statements saying what the Republicans are saying is not true. So, you know, the days are numbered for just outright lying and getting away with it. People do remember. People do check. And that's why journalists, reporters are such enemies of this administration, because they check. And they, you know, they don't always get it right. But they're our biggest defense against the lunacy we've been going through. And the lunacy that could get worse. And that's why I bring up the Electoral College, because, you know, even with all of this, Trump could still win again and lose by even more. You know what I mean? He could lose by 10 million people and still win based on the Electoral College if he plays his cards right. I'm sure he doesn't know how to play chess, but he's a pretty good chess player.
But wasn't it like five-dimensional chess? Isn't it?
I don't know where we are now.
It's like interdimensional, next dimension.
It's scary. It is scary where we are. But it's history. And I hope people take an interest, pay attention, because this is the kind of thing your kids, your grandkids will ask about. And they'll ask where you were. They'll ask what you did.
Well, they're definitely learning, I think.
Yeah.
We're all learning.
Oh, it's time for our look at film this week. What we've been following. We're up to 1958. Kyle and I are going through every Academy Award-winning film from the beginning, 1929, until... What is this, 2019? Wow, that's a lot of films. And we're up to 1958. 1958. Almost into the 1960s.
It's impressive, too. The color and the aesthetics for things. It's just it's incredible. Are we going to talk about the international one? Because that was really trippy, too. I'm sorry. I want to talk about it because... It was very bright and colorful. I'll start out. The name of the film is Mon Oncle.
Yeah.
Mon Oncle.
It means my uncle.
My uncle.
And it's French.
It's very French. And hysterical. And I think I noticed right away it felt like The Prisoner. It was dystopian in a very Stepford Wife kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Traditional, and a lot of, I think, what mutated in the U.S. with the 50s and 60s, but it was this French take on design and luxury and innovation and the future and what what it meant to live, and I just felt it was just amazing and hysterical.
It was so far ahead of its time. I had trouble believing it was from the 1950s. You have this beautifully shot film in color. You have this a modern architecture of the people who are caught up in consumerism and just getting all these mechanical devices to do work for them. And then you have this guy, the uncle, who lives in this ramshackle house on the other side of town where all kinds of craziness is constantly going on. And it just sent this amazing message of what it is to be human and what it is to be a consumer and the true joys of life. And, of course, you have this kid who basically wants to spend all his time with his uncle because he's human. And his parents aren't. His parents are just caught up in consumerism. They have this automatic gate that opens when somebody comes to it, and the wife turns on. It's really hilarious. If the person is important, she makes sure to turn on the dolphin, the water that comes out of the dolphin's mouth.
I think it's like a marlin, or yeah, it's like fish or a dolphin,
yeah,
or some kind of aquatic thing, and it's got bright blue water coming out of it, so it's like exaggerated.
This kitchen has all kinds of automated dishwashing and ovens and things like that. It's really hilarious. It is so funny, but it also sends a message as far as what is important and what is not. And it's just not something I expected to see in the 1950s. The director was Jacques Tati. He also starred as the uncle. In fact, he didn't get credit for starring in the film. And apparently this character, Monsieur Hulot, is his name in the film. There were a number of films with this character. I'm not sure if he has the same family or if he's just like a Charlie Chaplin type that keeps showing up. It was very much like a silent film. There was dialogue,
yeah,
but not very much dialogue. And a lot of it was just basically the kind of thing you would see in a silent film.
A lot of indirect dialogue and mumblings, muttering, and pleasantries and things. But it was mostly the sort of music and the antics of this the family dynamic and
yeah,
so on.
I hardly recommend this film. Mon Oncle, M-O-N. Second word, O-N-C-L-E. You might find it online as My Uncle. It's really worth a watch. You'll be surprised.
I think there's a lot of Foley, a lot of sound effects and stuff, too.
Yeah, you know, when the wife is walking in the garden, they just have these exaggerated footsteps. It's not meant to really match, but it's really hilarious to hear and to listen to. And the dogs, wow, they have such amazing dogs in that French film. They are trained to do all kinds of funny things in the street, and just the way they get on with people and things like that. And the kids have a blast playing tricks on people. Like, for instance, you hold the lid of a metal garbage can, right? You have a bunch of kids. You have cars lined up in a traffic queue. And, you know, we have cars, parking lots, traffic lights, all kinds of things like that. In the 1950s, it's fascinating to watch, at least for me. But you have these cars lined up, and so one kid hits the lid of the metal garbage can, creating this huge noise, and then the other kids push the car. So naturally, the person in the car thinks he just got hit by the person behind them. They get out of the car, get into a big argument with that person, and the kids have a blast. Another trick is somebody is walking down the street, and there's a lamppost in their way, and then they whistle. So the person turns around but keeps walking. So I haven't tried this. They hit the lamppost full in the face. I got to try that, see if that still works.
They had it down to, like, they send the little kid down to start sweeping the road to get them, to direct them to the sidewalk.
Guide them
into
the path.
They basically, like, run distraction, and they had all these tactics. It was hilarious.
But it's timeless, because kids can be entertained by things like that, you know, no PlayStation, no TV sets, just being out in the street, causing mischief. That is what it's all about, and it's just as much fun now as it was then. The American film we saw from 1958, the one that won the Academy Award, was Gigi. Also, it was based in France. In fact, it was filmed there. It was directed by Vincent Minnelli, who also directed An American in Paris, which you would think was filmed in France, but was not. It was filmed in Hollywood.
It was all soundstage.
Yeah, and he was very upset by that, so apparently this was making it up to him by letting him film in France for this film. Interesting, and also the lead was the same, too. Leslie Caron played the protagonist, Gigi. An interesting film, because she's like this 16-year-old girl who lives with her grandmother and mother. Now, French culture is strange because in this particular family, they don't really believe in marriage. So French men have a wife and they also have a mistress. And these, I guess, are the mistresses. So they get a house and they occasionally get kids, I guess, but they don't really have husbands. And so what they're doing is they're kind of grooming Gigi to be this kind of a person, too. So it's just kind of a culture clash there, seeing this kind of life being portrayed.
I think that one of the lines the grandmother imparts is, it's sometimes better not to get married at once, but to get married at last.
Yes,
kind of like delay that, be a mistress for a little bit, and yeah, if you want to get married, yeah, go for that. But
so yeah, now what's weird about this? So you have this. This male protagonist, who of course is the romantic interest, and he gets more and more infatuated with Gigi. But keep in mind, she's 16. So basically, it gets to the point where it's becoming a little bit more serious, and the grandmother and the great aunt are concerned by this. And I thought they were concerned because, well, you have this guy in his 30s at least. Hanging out with a 16-year-old girl, and it might be inappropriate. What they were concerned about was that he wasn't giving her the stuff he should be giving a mistress, such as a house, such as, you know, servants and things like that. So once they ironed that out with him, they were cool with it. They said, okay, you know, here's the guy that you can be a mistress for. And he is the one who wound up feeling guilty about it, saying, you know, this is not right for her. She's better than that. She shouldn't be treated the way a mistress is treated, you know, dumped and passed on to somebody else. And I'm giving it away, of course. In the end, he basically asked for her hand in marriage. And that is how this film got made in America, because you had what was known as the code, which prevented you from having immoral-type messages being sent in films all the way up until the 1960s. So by having this portrayal of French life, where people had mistresses and didn't get married and things like that, by saying marriage is the answer, marriage is the best thing you can do, basically Vincent Minnelli was able to get away with it and say, yeah, you see, I'm sending the right message.
I would just qualify that this is the sort of end or the last days of the code, and let's be real and not kid ourselves. Plenty of this adultery and other things, innuendo and that sort of thing, was imparted in films during the production code, but I think I would qualify and say that no overt displays of this were allowed without some sort of ending, as you've described.
Well, now we move on to 1959, so we'll be hopefully checking that out. We'll report back and let you know what we find. It's cool, though. It's cool seeing all these films.
Yeah, it's in the color, as I said, with Bridge Over the River Kwai and Mon Oncle, the trippy. It was so
Gigi too
dystopian. And yeah, Gigi the red.
Yeah,
in the grandmother's apartment.
I think we've reached a turning point with film here, where it just suddenly really leaps out at you, and you get drawn into the story a lot more just because of all the colors. We probably have a few black and white films left to go, but
I would just add in Gigi. There's a lot of singing.
It's a musical.
There's a lot of singing, and that's unusual in the sense that the sort of musical genre, well, kind of like an American in Paris, there's a lot of musical numbers in that, and that is an entire genre. So
Thank Heaven for Little Girls is a song.
It starts with
you want even more inappropriate things, but you know, you have to look at these things as they came out at the time and try to imagine yourself there.
Yeah, I'd love to see some gender bending with that.
Oh boy. Okay, well, you know what? We're out of time.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
indeed.
Finn is not late.
Is he here?
I think he is.
All right.
We're going to go out with a song that takes me back.
Oh, wow, he parachuted this time. That's incredible.
Well, good for him.
What a nice...
Now, there's a lot of talk of impeachment. You know, we've been hearing it everywhere, and it's likely now. It becomes more likely every day as we hear more. There's no real good songs yet about this. You know, if it was the 1960s or 70s, there'd be a song out in 2 weeks. So I have to go back to the beginning of this century, when Neil Young put out a song about impeaching the president. Of course, it's a different president, and it's weird how that looks so mild compared to what's happening now, even though two wars were started as a result. Just imagine Trump, you know, ordering troops into combat. Thank God that hasn't happened yet. It could, as he gets more desperate. Who knows what's going to happen? But some of the sentiment of the song works. Some of it doesn't. So it'll be an interesting little trip to go out on. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. And hopefully we'll be back again next week.
So long.
September 11th.